Welcome to an overview of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is part of a larger Indian epic called the Mahabharata, which is one of the most beloved epic tales of all time in India and Hinduism. So the Bhagavad Gita has moved from the status of epic or legend to religious text in many communities. And the conversation that unfolds between Krishna and Arjuna is widely viewed as a metaphorical commentary on spirituality. As Krishna explains to Arjuna the necessity of acting on the battlefield while detaching himself from consequences of the fighting, Hindu religious scholars and devotees study the Bhagavad Gita to gain insight into the nature of divinity, the human spirit, and the concepts of Dharma. Dharma meaning your purpose or the duty according to custom or law, and karma, which is the cosmic force generated by one's actions, and related to the Hindu belief system, belief in reincarnation, as really an essential to living in the world as they are to Arjuna in the epic. When I was in Bali a few weeks ago facilitating a 200-hour yoga teacher training as well, I, you know, obviously spent a lot of time with locals, and it is so beautiful because they all use the Bhagavad Gita almost like the Bible. And the Gita is very obviously, you know, was written approximately 1st, 2nd century CE. So when you read it, and it refers to the Lord and God often, so if you maybe don't resonate with those words because they're highly charged, maybe think of replacing them with Source or the universe. That personally really helped me actually when I first started reading the Gita. And you will see the more often you read it, you will always find different parts in the Gita, different lessons maybe that you may be going through yourself. And yes, you know, it's very outdated at a time, also where yoga was only done by the elite and by men. So taking everything with a pinch of salt and kind of maybe trying to draw parallels to our Western modern lives. So the Bhagavad Gita, there's actually a third person narrator that relates the conversation between Prince Arjuna and the deity Krishna, who represents the god Vishnu, through the perspective of the poet Sanjaya. So Krishna is an incarnation of the god Vishnu, and Vishnu is one of the three main gods in Hindu, along Brahma and Shiva. Bhagavad Gita in Sanskrit basically translates to Song of God or Song of the Blessed Ones. And then, yes, in the poem, Krishna gives spiritual and practical advice to the warrior Prince Arjuna. The Bhagavad Gita, so the dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, wherein Krishna explains the nature of the self and divinity in the universe, And in this explanation, Krishna discusses many critical ideas, some of which are really central to his own teachings. Almost every chapter discusses in detail the importance of the relationship between the self and God or the divine. And in the particular teachings Krishna advocates, the self and the divine are one and the same. And this concept is called Advaita, or non-dual. Krishna imparts to Arjuna that God permeates all beings in the universe. And the self is called Atman in Sanskrit. And in English loosely means soul. And this self within each being is ultimately a piece or spark of God encased in the body. When the body falls away and all the karma built up for many lifetimes is released, the soul or the self returns to its original form as God. And then consequently, Krishna tries to teach Arjuna the importance of deeply understanding the nature of the self and its relationship with divinity. So simply believing that self and God are one and the same is not quite what Krishna is talking about. People can hold this belief but not change their way of living or interacting with the sensory world. Krishna tells Arjuna about the primary yogic paths to understanding this union so as to transform completely the way a person exists in the world. This kind of understanding can be explained as an epiphany or a spiritual awakening. It goes beyond simple knowledge and requires total transformation of a person's being. And this interpretation of many others of the Bhagavad Gita translate this kind of transformational knowledge as wisdom. The person who has reached this state of wisdom through yoga is a sage or a master yogi, and the devotee develops a serene mind and treats all beings equally, and therefore then experiences daily life without attachment. And someone who has achieved this state is less likely to be reborn when the physical body dies. So the Gita is a lot of, you know, the talks are a lot about reincarnation, which I've mentioned earlier. And it discusses how the cycle, the endless cycle of death and rebirth, and which traits a human is attached to, which traits a human has. So one can free themselves from the cycle of suffering and rebirth through several types of yoga. The three paths of yoga are being discussed throughout the Gita as well. All types of yoga, all of which require devoted meditation. And only through disciplining the mind through meditation can a person reach an understanding of the self and God. And although a devotee may meditate while studying scripture or doing right action, the ability to focus the mind is critical in any yogic path. Krishna stresses the virtue of self-discipline because it is necessary for schooling the mind into the committed meditation that will transform a person. And to comprehend the self, a person must learn to let go of sensory experiences and remain unattached to desire. So people who are blown about by their senses or their bodily whims or longings and cravings and emotions that cannot achieve that required stillness that Krishna talks about. The self is ultimately unaffected by all these things and is ever present. Yoga allows one to be anchored in this larger self that is unchanging and timeless. a person attached to a physical body, entrapped by feelings and desires that produce an endless cycle of suffering, lacks this joyous freedom. And the only way out of this cycle is to realize the true nature of the self. So Krishna leads the way for Arjuna's fulfillment by teaching him how to commit his heart and mind to the yoga of action. Path of right action. One of the yogic paths Krishna introduces in the Bhagavad Gita is the path of right action, also called karma yoga. Along with the path of devotion called bhakti yoga, karma yoga is the primary path Krishna advocates in this text. He also praises the path of knowledge, or jnana yoga, which encourages the study of scriptures, as well as the guidance of a guru or a teacher in meditation and study. However, knowledge is not Arjuna's path, for he is a warrior and best suited to the action of karma yoga. Additionally, because those yoga students on the path of knowledge must engage in some action as embodied beings, that right action is critical in all paths. Krishna places strong emphasis on the path of right action through the Gita. He also emphasizes that none of the paths is truly exclusive of the others. So no matter which type of yoga is best aligned with a person's nature, the person can benefit from integrating it with others. This is why Krishna teaches Arjuna in detail about the yoga of devotion and the yoga of knowledge while guiding him toward the yoga of action. Path of devotion. So some schools of thought consider the path of devotion or bhakti yoga to be separate from karma yoga or jnana yoga. Jnana yoga is the yoga of knowledge, karma yoga, yoga of action. However, the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna insists on devotion or love for God as an integral part of any yogic path. He tells Arjuna that some people can achieve enlightenment from meditation on the unmanifest God or universal consciousness. A person dedicated to this abstract route can become a sage, but the path is more difficult than the others. The path of devotion requires the yoga student to meditate lovingly on God or Krishna in this case, while studying the scriptures or performing right actions. Basically, the yoga of devotion puts the focus on a personal relationship with a particular manifestation of God, such as Krishna. When someone following bhakti yoga either studies scriptures or does right action, the focus of pure love and devotion, or any manifestation of God really, in this way, a devotee focusing on love of God to achieve separation from the cycle of suffering. Because Krishna and Arjuna have a close relationship in the Gita, Krishna encourages Arjuna to take the path of loving Krishna and worshipping him through all actions. When we look at Hindu texts, so there are two major groupings of texts in the Hindu tradition, Shruti and Smriti. It's spelled S-M-R-I-T-I, Smriti. So Shruti, or that which is heard, encompasses the most sacred of Hindu texts, including the Vedas, or scriptures containing hymns, myths, prayers, and guidance about ritual. And then the Upanishads, which is the fourth section of the Vedas that contains commentary and philosophical inquiry. And these texts are considered to have been handed down or heard by the great sages and comprise the basis of most Hindu philosophy. Smriti, on the other hand, means that which is remembered and comprises Hindu literature passed down in the memories of ordinary people. although considered less sacred than their Shruti counterparts, Mritri texts are more influential in modern practices of Hinduism, really. And then the epics such as the Mahabharata or the Ramayana. So the Ramayana is an epic poem of India, which was composed about 300 BCE. And they're considered Mritri. They are stories with religious and philosophical importance that expound and exemplify the basic philosophies laid out in the Shruti texts. So, as you've already learned now, the Bhagavad Gita is part of the Mahabharata. And the whole of the Gita is a dialogue between Arjuna and Krishna on the battlefield. The Mahabharata is the longest epic poem still in existence, with about 100,000 slokas or verses. The Gita makes up 700 of those. Like the Gita, the composition of the Mahabharata is often attributed to the sage Vyasa, even though the epic was written and compiled over centuries. Extensive scholarship dates the work in its present form from about 400 CE. The epic story of the Mahabharata tells the story of the Pandavas and the Kauravas, two related families who clash over power and the ruling of a kingdom. The two sons, Dhritarashtra and Pandu, are both born to a great ruler. The elder one, Dhritarashtra, should inherit the kingdom, but because he is born blind, Pandu rules instead. Pandu then later dies, leaving five sons, and Dhritarashtra then takes the throne instead of Pandu's eldest. Dhritarashtra raises the Pandava boys with his own sons, of which there are roughly 100. When the eldest Kaurava son, Duryodhana, inherits the throne, he exiles all five of the Pandavas along with their common wife Draupadi. So to avoid further conflict, Dhritarashtra divides the kingdom into two parts, permitting his son to rule one and the Pandavas the other. The eldest Pandava, Yudhishthira, place dies with Duryodhana over both kingdoms and loses everything. The Pandavas are then exiled for 13 years. And the epic records the many adventures in exile, which ends with a battle between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. The Bhagavad Gita takes place just before that battle starts, with Prince Arjuna hesitant at first to fight his relatives. The two sides clash and all of the Kauravas are killed. Sorrowful of the death and their relatives, the Pandavas abdicate the throne to another relation and leave for the Himalayas. Four of the brothers, including Prince Arjuna and their wife Draupadi, perish during the journey. Yudhishthira is the only brother who reaches Indra's heaven in the mountains. He finds Duryodhana already there, having fulfilled his dharma as a warrior. Yudhishthira, however, still has attachments to release, so he is sent back into the cycle of rebirth for one more life. With many regional versions and variations, the story in the Mahabharata are frequently performed in theatres and incorporated into festivals all around India. An Indian television series production of this epic in the late 80s was one of the most popular television shows ever aired in India. So the Mahabharata has found and retained religious importance and popularity throughout India and around the world. Krishna, who's one of the two primary figures in the Gita, is a Hindu deity who appears in many different stories over the ages. He's widely worshipped. He's one of the most popular gods in India, and he's often considered an earthly incarnation of the god Vishnu. However, many Krishna-centric traditions argue that it's the other way around, that Krishna is a separate god in his own right. Krishna's history is documented in important texts. The royal family into which he was born hid him as the result of a prophecy that he would destroy his uncle, the king. Krishna was raised instead by a cowherd and his wife. The texts describe Krishna as a mischievous child who is also incredibly powerful and able to slay demons. As a young man, Krishna is known as a lover. He calls out with his flute to the gopis, or female cowherds, to dance with him in the moonlight. Krishna later becomes involved in the conflict between the Pandavas and the Kauravas, even though he does not fight in the battle. Instead, he then becomes the advisor and the charity to Prince Arjuna. The original philosophy of yoga incorporates physical poses or asanas related to meditation. But these are only a small part of a larger concept that Krishna illuminates in the Bhagavad Gita. Yoga, meaning to yoke or the union, is also one of the primary systems of Hindu philosophy. The practice of yoga was systemized by the sage Patanjali, who lived in like the 2nd century BCE or 5th century CE, and it was systemized in the Yoga Sutras. Some key learnings that the Gita teaches us, and this can be, you know, taken into modern in our life as well, is when meditation is mastered, the mind is unwavering like the flame of a lamp in a windless place, meaning that when we have a still mind, we can face, you know, anything, any troubles. Some of the learnings are, you know, whatever happened, it happened for the good. Whatever is happening for the good. And whatever will also happen for the good. Saying that we can't be attached to certain things because it is also out of our control. But having the trust and surrendering to knowing that everything will happen for its highest good. In quite a lot of the chapters, Krishna also talks about the outcome of an action. So one of the learnings really is to always focus on the work and the fruits will follow. That you have control over the work that you do, but not the fruit. So doing the action without having any expectations for the fruits. The soul is neither born nor does it die. A person can rise through the efforts of his own mind or draw himself down in the same manner because each person is his own friend or enemy. There are some
beautiful teachings in the Bhagavad Gita, and
I definitely recommend reading the book. And it's one of those where you can read over and over and over again, and you'll always find different teachings. I hope you've enjoyed this summary or introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, and if you've any questions, please do reach out to me. Thank you so much.